I would like to welcome you all to our Let's Talk Open Discussion here today. August being Gastroparesis Awareness Month, AGMD is honored to bring you this program to shed light on gastroparesis and to let all those who are suffering that there is hope and that there are many of us who understand and that you are all not alone. We're so glad that you're with us to talk openly about some of the emotional and physical challenges, some of the myths and misconceptions surrounding gastroparesis. We encourage some helpful tips, and we really want to talk about some of the lessons we've learned as a result of living with gastroparesis. During our program, we ask that you state your first name every time you would like to talk, because that way there we can match the voice with who is talking, because we have quite a few people on the program as well. You just say your first name, you don't want to know your last name. If you would like to get in contact with anybody who's speaking, you can always reach out to AGMD. Do not share your personal contact during the program or ask for anybody else as the program is going on. We encourage you to speak. Just be mindful that there are a lot of people on the program who may want to share their experiences and concerns and questions. So keep that in mind. And lastly, be very respectful of the language you use, because we want to make sure it's inoffensive to those who are listening or sharing their information. Now, I want to start with some of the emotional challenges. And for those who don't know me, my first name is Mary Angela, and I've been with the Association of Gastrointestinal Motility Disorders since 1991. And with gastroparesis, and I'm just going to focus on gastroparesis because I know some of you are suffering from other motility problems as well as other medical diseases or diseases. But just focusing, and these can all align because the emotional things can certainly match with some of the other symptoms or problems that you're having. But I think with some of the emotional challenges, I really gave this some great thought, because the emotional challenges have changed over the years. From the beginning, when I was first diagnosed, or I should say the process of diagnosis, to finally getting that diagnosis, adjusting to that diagnosis, learning to cope with it, and then learning to accept it. And I've had gastroparesis for well over 30 years, 30-some-odd years. And I think one of the major hurdles that I had was that mourning process, mourning the loss of being able to enjoy food like a normal person. Another one was my frustration in trying to make other people understand when I was having trouble understanding it myself. Of course, that emotional part of losing my health and being carefree, and now everything had to take on a whole new dimension and gee, I'm not feeling well, I guess I can't do that. And with that is that emotional challenge of learning to deal with the unpredictable part of it. Some days you're able to eat one thing, the next day you can't eat that same thing. One day you may be feeling somewhat functional, and then the next day you're totally debilitated. The social aspect was a huge part for me to try to cope with emotionally. And then along with the self-esteem, because you lose your confidence, because now you're not as free and you can't do many things as you had hoped, and being believed by the medical profession as well as by friends and relatives. So those were just some of my emotional challenges that I journeyed through throughout this, getting to the spot where I am now, enjoying food. I've learned that the foods that I eat, it is my job. That's my work. And if I don't eat, then I don't live. so I need to do it and take that risk. Making others understand, I have learned that some people will understand and there are some who won't, and I have to be okay with that. Loss of health, that I still try. Being unpredictable, I've learned to control things. Social part, I've learned to kind of control that. And being saved, again, is something that as long as I know in my heart that this is a real illness, not in my mind, I'm okay with that. Anybody want to jump in and talk about their emotional challenges? Oh, you're all well-adjusted and didn't have any or don't have any emotional challenges. That's wonderful. Nobody?
Okay. I have emotional challenges.
First name, please.
Mindy.
Mindy, hi. Welcome. I'm so glad that you're here and share some of these challenges. Go right ahead.
Some of what you already mentioned, besides mourning the loss of who we used to be and having to learn to accept the new person, the new life that we are learning to live, the fact that anytime you socialize, 99% of the time socializing is over drinks or food or at a party. And I don't know about anybody else, but I'm sure there's somebody out there that has what I do where I can't handle a lot of these smells. I haven't been to a restaurant in 6 years. So it tends to put you on an emotional roller coaster when you have so many things you're trying to cope with in addition to not having a good support foundation at home.
That's excellent. 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 Do you have something you wanted to continue on with?
Just, you know, that we all have to try to somehow figure out what's going to work for us as an individual. I mean, like my family, they live in denial. And no matter how many times they have seen me get sick or pass out in front of them, it's like they will be supportive at the moment. But then a couple days later, there's a lot of things that are said that get back to me, and it's hurtful. And that puts you through another emotional cycle.
I'm sure that, and honestly, some of the points you're bringing up are shared, I'm sure, by so many other people who are dealing with this gastroparesis. Anybody else experience with what Mindy just said?
Excuse me, this is Laura. I have kind of the same problem with my folks. I don't think it's so much denial with my mom. She just thinks that I overreact because she knows nothing about it and doesn't understand how bad it is. And for my father, he's medically naive enough that if there isn't a commercial about it, it doesn't exist in his mind. But they are the same way. They are very cordial and, you know, and supportive, so to speak, around me. I prevent myself from ever being near them when I'm sick. And if I start to feel bad, I get out. You know, I'll get out and go throw up down the other end of the road somehow, but I'll leave because I can't deal with them, like, not dealing with it. And they're nice on the surface, but same problem. It's, you know, behind my back, which they think they're behind my back. You know, I'm a hypochondriac. It's a, you know, it's not that bad. It's just a little, like a little bug, you know. And 16 years later, really? I, you know, it's my thought, really? It's just like having a little bug, huh? But I agree with you, Mindy. It's really hard, and that is, even after 16 years of dealing with it, they still will say something, and it throws me. Even though I kind of knew it, it throws me off. And
it does.
Perfect quick example. 2 weeks ago, I was talking to my mother, and I was just saying how right now I'm not comfortable staying over because I've kind of gone back to mornings being really bad, which happens to so many of us. And her response was, well, call the doctor. They can do something for that, right? And I just, it floored me. I'm like, after all this time, you think, really? I was like, you know, but I kind of knew she didn't believe me, you know, that I was as bad as I am and that there is no treatment for each piece of it, you know, that's going to really save you yet. There's plenty of hope. There's stuff coming, but right now we don't have it. And it's a nightmare.
Do you ever wonder why they talk behind our back instead of face-to-face and asking us what we're going through? I mean, unless you live with somebody that has GP, you're not going to get the full understanding of what they go through.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, I no longer really wonder because my folks are kind of like that. They're not big on people being honest and straightforward. And they're also the kind of people that can certainly dish it out, but they can't take it at all. So to be honest with them and say, you know, how come you haven't done that or whatever, I'll get a big argument about it because, you know, it's just gotten to a point where none of that's worth it anymore. I'm cordial, I do what I have to do, but it's not a happy family relationship anymore at all.
It's sad because it doesn't have to be that way.
No, it doesn't.
And this is me, Angela. Just wanted to add that I know not only with family, but it hurts far more when it is family, that some people, they just don't want to hear about illness. They don't want it in their lives. They don't want to believe it, and they just want to go their own way. Other people can only relate to things that they've gone through. And I know you said if you don't have GP, then you don't understand. But when you have a loving, supportive family, and I can only use my husband as an example, he has said to me so many times, I don't exactly know what you're going through, but I see the suffering that you're going through and know that I'm here for you.
Yeah.
So that shows
and that's beautiful.
Hmm?
That's beautiful.
And I understand I'm blessed to have that because so many people that we talk with all the time, they have the relationship where family members shut down, don't want to deal with this at all. Sometimes some family members don't want to because they also are mourning the process. It doesn't, of course, sound that way in cases like Laura, but in certain cases, that is, in fact, why it happens. So it's unfortunate when that communication breaks down and you can't respond to how you're feeling and what you need from your family. And they can't be open enough to communicate that they love and care for you. It's very sad. Anybody else want to jump in and talk about any of those emotional challenges that they have gone through or are going through? No. Well, you had brought... Oh, go ahead.
So this is Laura again. I can say, going back to what you were saying, one of the biggest emotional challenges I had, and I find with everybody I've pretty much ever talked to, it's very... with any kind of chronic illness, is that acceptance part. And it's so hard to accept what you have and, you know that it's going to do what it's got to do. But you know, it so helps us. Before I accepted it, you know, and again, I've been doing this 16 years, so I've accepted it a while back, but before I was able to accept it, I was severely emotionally depressed, like, all the time. And I didn't have, like, I have no purpose, I have no reason to do anything, or kind of, I just couldn't get a grip. And then when I was able to accept it, I still get depressed just like everybody else. But I know that when I'm depressed, I say to myself, you know, this is only going to last, you know, a couple days maybe, and then you're going to feel better. So don't let yourself sink. And that's the only way, like, I can pull myself out. So the acceptance part, I think anybody that can get themselves to that point will find that their emotional depression and stress from this will go down. Not, you know, go away at all, but it will go down, and you're able to deal with it on an emotional and physical level so much better. That's my two cents, my experience.
I understand what you're saying, but I guess everybody's at different points with not just different times of their GP, but, you know, because it's unique to each one of us individually, there are many people that are on tube feedings, many that are on, that could still eat food. And so I would imagine that we're all, even though we're all on an emotional roller coaster, we're all at different levels of that ride. And going back to you talking about the depression, it's not always easy to pull yourself out of. And so for me, if I'm having a bad day, I just keep telling myself that there's hope for a better tomorrow.
Absolutely.
And I just allow myself the emotion that I need to deal with and go through so that I can move forward, if that makes any sense.
I think that's
absolutely.
That was very good, because towards the end of this, I was going to talk about that hope and why having gastroparesis at this point is certainly not good. However, the research that's being done is really gaining traction, and that's the encouragement of it all. You had mentioned, Mindy, something about the smells, and I'm going to kind of go back and forth with and as well as the physical. But with the smell part, in many patients, including myself, or it was more the emotional part of, oh my God, I really want to eat that, but, and that smell is just making me go crazy. But as the disease in my particular case progressed, it's more of some of the smells can trigger my nausea so badly that it goes to the point of vomiting. And anytime there's somebody frying something or barbecues, things like that, I don't know what it is, but suddenly it just now has that physical implication. Anybody else have problems with smells making you feel sicker?
Hi, this is Brittany. And I would say yes, definitely. It's not constant for me, but when I'm already not feeling good, any smell, whether it's food related or not, any kind of smell can trigger it. And actually, I just recently moved to a new home, and the first couple of nights that we were here, we were able to open the windows at night, and apparently we have a resident skunk, and every night the smell woke me up, and I was so nauseous, and nothing that I did could really fix that, because, you know, once that smell is in your house, even if you close the windows, it's not going anywhere. And
oh my goodness.
Yeah, so definitely I can definitely relate to the smell portion. And same thing for food too, depending on what it is. Some smells trigger me more, especially ones that tend to linger, like barbecues and those kind of things.
Oh, yeah.
The longer
bacon,
a smell lingers,
popcorn.
Yeah, the longer the smell lingers, the worse it is for me, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And I think another symptom that I struggle with a lot is the brain fog and the loss of energy. And
oh my gosh. Yeah.
We have an agenda of this is what I need to get done today, and my mind gets cloudy. I can't formulate a sentence correctly. I write something. Today I look and I say, who invaded my body and just wrote this, because it certainly doesn't look like me. And the same with that energy level. Even though you have to do things, sometimes you can power through it, but sometimes the body wins out and says, this is it. So I know that's a huge factor with many of you. Anybody else want to jump in and talk about if they too have that brain fog and energy loss?
Hi, Miss Mary Angela.
Oh, hi.
This is Melissa. You know, this is the thing that gets me. I hate it. I have an agenda. I have a plan. I'm organized. I don't like deviation from it. And when I get up and I can't accomplish everything that I put on my little list, it does not go well here. I hate that. I hate that. And I'm like you. I will write something, and when I write it, I think, well, that sounds really good, you know? When in the middle of my little brain fog, it sounds good to me. And then 5 hours later, I read it, and I think, oh, my goodness, I actually posted that. That is horrendous. It's horrible. It's a horrible thing.
I'm laughing because Melissa and I are very much alike in many ways regarding that striving for perfection and having things just so and having our agenda. So it plays with our heads.
Yeah.
Precisely, like, really does. And Melissa has all of these Facebook groups that she monitors and does an amazing job with advocating as well. And
yes, she does. Mindy, by the way.
Hi, Miss Mindy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing okay today.
How are you all that when you have that kind of fatigue and brain fog? As I always say, when I'm dealing with patients, family members, and with certain problems, I need to be on my game. And if I'm not, I may have a delay in getting back because I want to make sure that I know what I'm talking or writing the way that I should be. I think another problem that many patients struggle with.
Mary Angela?
Yep.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Before you move on to another subject, can I just add something to the organization one?
Yeah, just say your first name so that we can match the
voice. I'm sorry. Okay, this is Mindy again. What I wanted to say was I also make those to-do lists, and I used to drive myself crazy because I might get lucky and get to the second line before I run out of energy. And I'm the type of person that if it's written down on a list, it has to be done that day because I always dated my list. So what I did to try to fix that is when I make a list now, I do not put a day or a date. I just make the list, and then I work on it as I'm capable of doing it.
Well, that's very good suggestion. I have said in the past, and again, this is Mary Angela, I keep a pad of paper by my right beside me on the desk, and every time I accomplish something, I don't care if it's combing your hair, making the bed, whatever it may be, I write it down, and then on the days, sometimes it's pages and pages, And some days it's one thing or two things. And on the days that it's only the two things, at least I have some solace knowing that, well, I guess my body went out on this one, but look what I had done 2 days ago or 1 day ago. So that has been helpful with me. What I wanted to say is one of the things, well, I'm going to kind of combine it. It's that nausea and vomiting. So I don't know, and I don't remember what it's like not to have 24-hour-a-day nausea. And I don't vomit every day, but there are days when it gets very aggressive, and then it's just continuous throughout the day. So I wonder if patients who are having the gastroparesis really are struggling with that. And if they are, if they're finding that there's any helpful thing that they use or do in order to keep that nausea or keep that vomiting at an ebb flow instead of just consistent. Anybody? So I know there are medications out there that are used for nausea and vomiting.
This is Mindy.
Yes, Mindy?
I do take Phenergan.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, and it's hit or miss, but more often than not, these little ginger candies that they're like chewies, but you could suck on them. I put mine in the freezer so that I can suck on them because they're almost like a gummy bear type, I guess,
mm-hmm.
but they're ginger. And they do help settle the stomach a little bit. Like I said, hit or miss. I don't generally drink soda. However, if my Phenergan's not working fast enough and I really am trying to avoid vomiting, I will also try to take a little bit of ginger ale, but I have to have a lot of ice in it and let it sit a few minutes because I can't tolerate that strong carbonation. But when it waters it down, it takes away a lot of the carbonation. Sometimes that helps.
Oh, interesting. I was introduced by this doctor years ago with something called the Relief Band. It was originally used for chemotherapy patients, but this doctor, who's world-renowned and on our board, had mentioned this particular band, and I know you see the C bands that are over-the-counter for nausea, and it works on the acupuncture pressure points on the wrist, but those never worked for me. This particular band, and they use it for seasickness too, and pregnancy, but the one that I have, which is years and years old, it looks like a watch in a sense, and mine has a black face on it with these numbers, and you position it on your wrist, it's like a watch. The only thing is the face goes on the back side of your wrist, and you can adjust the electronic impulses to very slight or very much potent. And that can sometimes, in conjunction with medicine, take an edge off. I don't know if sometimes it's the mind saying, I can concentrate on this versus concentrate on the nausea. But
yeah.
Certainly acupuncture has been found to help with certain types of motility. Magnetic therapy they've used for nausea as well. So if those people who like to look outside the box for alternatives, there are some options out there. And that brings me to low back pain. Because with gastroparesis, distends or swells, oftentimes patients can get lower back pain. And some people don't make that connection, but when you think about it, if your belly is swelling or your gut isn't working right, it's going to put pressure on that spine and the muscles. So what I have found helpful is if my husband can kind of massage it at those points when I'm really, really suffering to the point of almost going to the hospital, that can sometimes help in all types of motility, but it can also help take the edge off of nausea in certain instances. Anybody else have that low back pain or have that belly distension, and that brings me to the clothes that we wear? It's either going to be elastic, or as I'm sitting on the desk, by the desk right now, I have the top button on my pants unbuttoned, and an overblouse. I'm always covering my belly because I always have that Buddha look where it's just swelled out. Anybody else want to jump in who hasn't spoken?
Miss Mary Angela?
Yes.
This is Melissa. I actually have osteoarthritis in my lower back, so it's not necessarily caused by the gastroparesis, but I do bloat and get distended, and it does cause me some lower back pain, worse than it would normally be with the osteoarthritis. And I actually went to physical therapy several years ago for my back injury and learned some exercises there that have helped me with my back. And you know, about the first year I did those exercises, it was painful, and I thought, well, you know, this is just ridiculous. This guy knows nothing about lower back pain, and this is going to kill me. But after about a year of doing them, my back really got a lot stronger, and I have a lot fewer problems with that right now. So I don't know if that would be an option for people. I know, you know, with nausea, exercise is sometimes not even possible, but it is something that's helped me quite a bit, that and a chiropractor.
Very good suggestion, Melissa. And, of course, Melissa is an exercise buff, too. So
yeah.
I'm a co-pilot of flying a plane, and I would break my eyes if I lived with Melissa with some of the things that she is in with her must for adventure, I would say.
Yeah.
I want to jump to now some of the myths that are surrounding gastroparesis.
So some of the what?
Some of the misconceptions that people have about gastroparesis. And one of them is that if you have gastroparesis, then you're definitely going to be nauseous all the time. And that's untrue. In my case, I do. But that's not true with all patients. And the other one is that all patients vomit with gastroparesis. That is another untruth, because there are patients with gastroparesis who never vomit, but they may be nauseous, and it may slow and ebb. So in other words, they may go through an exacerbation, and it gets really bad, and then it kind of ebbs, which happens with so many of the motility disorders, by the way, and it takes me back to that unpredictable nature of it, where suddenly, there it is. It's just full-blown, and you're trying to connect dots and figure out why this happened. And then suddenly, it kind of ebbs a bit. But not all patients have that. And so even though we have a lot in common, it may present differently in patients. Another misconception is that all patients with gastroparesis are very thin or emaciated, and that's untrue.
Mm-hmm.
Patients who are not only thin and emaciated, but there are patients who are of average weight, and there are patients who are obese with this. So the way you look, and so many of us do not even look ill, which brings more misconceptions about gastroparesis being real and the suffering that goes into it. But it really is something that we have asked doctors. I know a dietitian had asked one of the world-renowned doctors, why is it that weight can vary so much when you can't eat and you have gastroparesis? And this one particular doctor was doing some research, and it was inconclusive. They don't have an answer yet. So I don't know. My case, my doctor, my body is just so used to working with the limited amount that it consumes that it just works with that. And I don't know. Anybody else with any of those 3 points? Anybody who hasn't spoken want to jump in? And by the way, if you really want to speak and you are kind of shy about it or you're having trouble jumping in, just call out my name. Just say Mary Angela, and I can make sure that we stop the program so we can hear you. But I think sharing that information and knowing that other people are going through it is really important. So anybody want to capitalize on what I just said so far? Because I'm not done with some of these misconceptions for sure. Anybody? No, I hear breathing, but I'm not hearing voices.
I was going to, this is Mindy, I was going to say something, but I forgot now what it was.
Oh, too. Like brain fog. We understand that.
Brain fog.
Another, and this is Mary Angela again, that gastroparesis only affects the solid foods that you eat.
Only affects what?
Solids. So patients only have gastroparesis. When they have gastroparesis, they're only affected by solids. And that was truly the first belief with it. And then they found there was a patient population that was only affected by liquids. And then there's the population like me who is affected by solids as well as liquids. So as full as I get with one bite of food, I can have that same feeling with just one sip of something, of water that I drink or tea. That's something that a lot of people don't realize, but it is true. Some people think that gastroparesis only affects women. That's untrue. I think more women are apt to speak up more than men, but we have quite a few males who do. And people of all ages, we have children with gastroparesis as well. Now, I can't stress this next point enough, which is stress does not cause gastroparesis.
No, but it doesn't help it.
And that's exactly my point. Certainly, if you are stressed, under a lot of pressure, emotionally, physically, it's going to affect the gut. That's a giveaway. But if you have been in a stressful situation, that is not the underlying cause of gastroparesis. So in other words, gastroparesis is not in your head. Anybody want to talk? Melissa, I think you have something to say about that. You're lost.
Well, I have something to say about lots of things. The first thing, thank you. The really big thing that I see in the groups, and this is not an issue for me. I actually have trouble maintaining my weight, but there are a lot of people in the groups who are actually gainers, and they don't lose weight with gastroparesis. And they go to doctors, and they're told, well, you don't have it then because you would be losing weight. And they are not believed at all. As a matter of fact, I was on Twitter yesterday, and the AGA put up a post, a poll, which of these symptoms is not related to gastroparesis? Weight gain. Weight gain was their symptom, and I begged to differ with them. I was, you know, come in our groups, and 15,000 people will tell you that's not true. I think this needs further study. It is really tough for those people. Their families don't believe them because they aren't on the verge, you know, they don't look like they're on the verge of death. They're, you know, a good weight. And their doctors don't believe them, and it is really an issue for these people.
Melissa, if I may, this is Mindy. I remembered what I wanted to say in reference to what you just said. When I was first diagnosed back in 2003, I went through what everybody else did, you know, trying to figure out what was wrong. Well, the one thing I never understood back then was I was gaining weight. I gained weight and I wound up at just over 200 pounds. But then one day something changed in my body and I plummeted all the way down to 100 pounds. And it scared me. I was losing weight like 10, 12 pounds a month. So I absolutely agree. When people say it's not, you know, you don't have GP because you're overweight, what my doctor explained, and I don't know how true it is, I'm just throwing this out there because this was the explanation I got. Even for those people that can only eat a little bit, I guess apparently what was happening is I shut off my metabolism.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not intaking enough calories to either maintain a certain weight, lose weight. It just shuts it off and your body is storing every little bite of something that you took. I don't know if anybody else has heard that, but that is the explanation I got.
Yes, that's what I've read and heard too, that it's a lot of people refer to it as starvation mode, where your body, your metabolism slows so much and your body holds on to every little calorie and nutrient and fat and everything else. And you cannot actually lose weight like a normal person would lose weight anymore. It's
right.
A survival mechanism.
Yeah. But it's scary when you start plummeting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And as Melissa had indicated, when you're going to a doctor and you're trying to seek help and but you look okay, and the doctor is unfamiliar with gastroparesis to the level that the doctor should, it can, again, get back to you emotionally, because being believed by the medical profession or the doctor who, in the doctor's care is so important, which takes me to, if you do have gastroparesis, you may have had a gastric emptying test one day and it was abnormal. And then you take it another day a few years later and maybe it's normal. And then you take it again and it's normal. And then you take it again and it's abnormal. So sometimes the test is only showing a picture of what it's like where you are at that point in time. But I hear that a lot, like, I have the test. They said I had gastroparesis. Mm. Now they're saying I don't have it. Well,
yes.
It's not necessarily. you may have it. And it just varies.
That's very interesting.
Hmm? And
that's very interesting. I've never heard that.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Melissa, sure, you've heard that in your groups, correct?
Yes, absolutely. I hear that all the time. And
wow.
It is a source of great stress for people because they have been told that they have gastroparesis sometimes for years. And then they repeat the emptying test and they're like, well, am I cured then? Because my symptoms are still here. And if they don't have a doctor who understands that that test can vary from moment to moment, they are really upset about that. They think they had a diagnosis and now it's been taken away and they think they're starting from square one, or maybe it was a false diagnosis to begin with. And it's very, very upsetting and stressful for them.
Yeah, I have never heard that. Thank you for sharing that.
Laura,
both of you.
Mindy, I can actually attest to this. I am one of those people. In 2003, I was involved in the FDA study for the neurological stimulator. There we go. Can't even say it. And I went to a doctor across the country. I actually had to fly out there 5 months in a row. and I had 5
wow.
stomach emptying tests, and not one of them would, you would never look at two of, you know, any of them and go, this is the same person. I had incredibly
wow.
nothing moved. I barely made the limit. When I got there, you had to have 10% left in your stomach and to get the stimulator to be involved in the study, and I only had 17. But the next one, there was like 97% left at 4 hours. You know,
wow.
they can vary because, you know, it's just my point of view. But if our stomachs are, quote, paralyzed completely, then we're on TPN. If we can eat anything, then they work and they don't work. You know, sometimes it's working, maybe not great, but it's working better than it does other times. And obviously that's what happened with
True.
Me. You know, sometimes it was kind of working and dumped the eggs out. You know, one of them I had 78% of it left in the first hour. It was crazy. I mean, and luckily I had a good doctor that is a GP special, you know, is one of the world-renowned ones now, understand by my symptoms and stuff that I really had it. But those tests can vary. And it's not fair that they tell people they don't have it without knowing enough about it that it can vary.
Exactly. And you know, this is Cindy again. I find that I learn so much more through our community than I do through actual doctors. As sad as that is, it's true.
Yeah. And this is Mary Angela again. Laura has gone to, and I know the doctor she has gone to, it's world-renowned. He does research in this. That's the importance, if you're running into issues like this, to make sure that you're seeing a doctor who specializes in digestive motility, and specifically gastroparesis, if you can find one in your area. Sometimes it means traveling, like Laura had to do. But it's so imperative that you go to a physician who really gets it, because he's researching
mm-hmm.
it, sees more than a few patients with it, and the doctor takes the whole history of what the patient is saying, how the patient physically is, and then based on tests, based on all of these other things, that's where it comes, that diagnosis. Now, some people who have gastroparesis, literally the gastroparesis, they're totally functional and kind of goes into a reprieve. Some people may say they're cured. But I know Laura had been mentoring somebody who was in such a need. He was really debilitated with it, and through Laura's help there, she encouraged him to get out, do things, and gave him that support that he needed. And then ultimately, he called one day and said, you know, I think I'm cured. He says, the problem is, I always think it's going to come back, so I'm still afraid, but I've been able to do a lot more things. So some people feel, because I have gastroparesis, my life is over, I can't do anything. But that can be untrue. It's, again, the state of mind. It's that, well, there is a perfect example, too. In spite of the suffering, she does these online, lost count of the online community she does on Facebook, but she also does her advocating and is reaching out with everything that she's doing. Laura's another perfect example of a person who has done so much great work in helping people and giving of herself to get over that thing, that just because you have this doesn't mean that your sense of purpose is different. I mean, it's gone. I say this all the time, that you're all suffering. We may be suffering in different ways. We may be suffering at different periods within our lives with different things. But that does not exclude you from having that purpose. People who have heard me talk you can block it a million and one times. I was not the first one to raise my hand and say, yep, give me this, I can't wait, and give me all the other disorders, all the other diseases I have, because I really want to learn about it, and God, give me these so I can understand, because my esophagus is involved, I can understand when patients talk about their esophagus, and I have pseudo obstruction, now I can understand those. I was the first one, I'm going to tell you, I was in the back of a line, and this hit me broadside, didn't expect it, at the age of 26. However, I remember sitting in a rocking chair, listening to my grandfather clock timing and looking out the window. And at this point in my life, I happened to be down to 69 pounds. And the doctor said, well, you can't exert any energy. You just need to stay in bed. You can't do anything. And I thought about that. But you know what? That's not living. That's not, what am I doing?
No.
What am I doing here? I'm just existing, and I won't have that. And I rolled up my sleeves, and I prayed about it. I'm very religious. And ultimately, God gave me the privilege of this organization. And I found that by helping other people, that helped my heart. It helped heal me. And not only that, but that sense of purpose of, wow, you all of you on this, everybody with gastroparesis, purpose may not be what you thought it was going to be, but now your purpose is learning about your gastroparesis, helping others who are going through it, and teaching about gastroparesis to the world. And drawing more awareness to it, inherently, that has become their purpose. And in my estimation, what a wonderful purpose to have in your life. If you look at people, and there are some people that live their whole lives, they go to work, they come home, and they relax. They go to work, they come home, they relax, and they're making money, sure. But the purpose that you have is far more valuable. And I am just so honored to be with all of you here today and with the gastroparesis community to draw that awareness. We're running out of time here, so I just wanted to give you a few more tips and then just summarize a little bit of some of the lessons learned. And one is, and we talked a little bit about this, keeping your mind occupied, be it listening to music, doing a hobby. Pets have been instrumental in my life, my dog, watching a movie, but interacting is so important. Talking with others who understand, whether it's in online or whether it's in groups like ours where we have the ability to listen and talk with each other. Getting help if you're sunk in the bowels of depression or anxiety, get professional help with that. But make sure you're going to somebody who understands chronic illness. Because if you don't go to somebody who necessarily, I mean, there are good ones out there, but we're not cookie cutter people. There is no diet that's going to work for one and absolutely be perfect for the next person. It's all individual in nature. On the diet, eating small, mini meals, and grazing, what I call grazing throughout the day, is certainly a better thing than sitting down to three main meals and trying to get that all down and wait for the stomach to empty. And regarding lessons learned, I think, I want you to share this, but my take on it is that life is truly a blessing. And it's what you get with what you have. And my faith. Anybody want to add anything to tips or lessons that they've learned as a result of living with this illness? Anybody else who hasn't spoken? Did you find your voice yet?
My name is Mo, and here's my voice. I am new to gastroparesis, and I am new to this group. This is my first time. And I had questions, but you're answering my questions, which is great. One of them being just when I think I'm on solid ground, like it's like someone pulls out the rug and everything falls.